Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good, Justin. How are you?
I am wonderful.
You know, it's funny. We had a few people write in recently and say, I'm still having trouble telling you apart. So if you're hearing this voice, this is Aaron.
I'm the one that asks him, how are you doing tonight, Aaron?
And you are?
I am Justin.
Yeah. So good to meet all of you.
Do we really sound that much alike?
I don't know.
You're so just, I won't say monotone, but you're so structured with your language, and I'm just all over the place with mine, so I just assume that people would know.
Well, maybe you just help them out.
Yeah. And if you don't know which one's which, like, when you meet us, I have hair. No offense, Aaron. My hair is receding, but I do still have some.
I shave all mine off.
Yeah. I'm not to that point yet, but probably soon. Anyone going to the St. Paul meetup at Joseph's Grill, we will see you this coming week on the 16th.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling T-shirts from a booth at your local farmer's market or dishing out handmade crafts online, Shopify's POS system manages it all. Unite your in-person and online business with a trusted platform that supports your retail hustle. Get started with hardware tailored to your needs, from payments on the go to full-scale retail setups, with round-the-clock support to keep your sales smooth as silk. Do the smart thing for retail. Go with Shopify. For a limited time, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Wondery, all lowercase. Take your business to new heights. Visit shopify.com/Wondery today. That's shopify.com/Wondery.
So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
People love a good mystery, Justin.
Yeah, we're finally doing a mystery. We're getting away from murder and mayhem. So you can tell that we're trying to mix it up a little bit here.
Well, actually, we've covered quite a bit of mystery lately, I think. We covered the Lost Girls of Panama recently. That was a mystery. But this one comes about because most people describe it as the Dyatlov Pass of America.
Which, I think this one's more mysterious than that, because in that case, you have people that are going on a hike in a treacherous area that fall to some sort of horrible demise. Whereas this, they weren't hiking or camping. They weren't supposed to be in the wilderness, right?
Yeah, they weren't even supposed to be where they were found or where their car was left.
So lots of questions on how this goes down, how five men end up on the side of a mountain, four men, one missing.
Tonight is the Yuba County Five. And this group ran into trouble on February 24th, 1978, in California.
Yeah. I've heard this case referred to as the Matthias Group and other names. So Yuba County 5 or Matthias Disappearance. If you want to go check out more information, you can Google those names.
These five men, what they had in common was that they were part of a program for mentally handicapped adults. And this program they were a part of, it was the Yuba County Rehabilitation. It's basically a vocational center. They would help these men and others train and find work and help them find places to live. Let's go through the men. There's Jack Madruga, who is 30, from Maryville. He was 5'11", 190 pounds. He was a high school graduate and an Army veteran. He had been recently laid off from his job. He was considered to have a low IQ, but he wasn't diagnosed. He was obviously a part of this program because his family felt that he needed structure and assistance. And so from what we can tell, this had been a very good program for him.
And being that he was an Army veteran, that would have given him structure and he would have been able to function pretty well, because you need a regiment. You need to be told what to do. So he's given that in the Army. But once he's out, he needs a little bit of assistance if he's considered slow. He is good friends with William Lee Sterling, who is 29 years old. He's 5'10", 170 pounds, brown hair, blue eyes. He was very religious and would spend lots of hours at the library reading literature and would help bring Jesus and the Word of God to patients at the organizations and institutions that they were at.
There was Theodore Earl Weir. He was 5'11", 200 pounds. He worked for a while as a janitor and a snack bar clerk, but later quit because his family thought that it just wasn't working out for him. They thought perhaps the job was too much for him. He was described as being a very friendly person, almost too trusting. And they said that he would get really worked up and upset if, say, he waved at somebody, not even someone he knew, just at somebody, and they chose not to wave back.
He was good friends with William Sterling. He would call him on the phone and read sci-fi novels, newspaper articles, and funny names from the phone book.
Jackie Hewitt was 25, from Maryville. He was 5'9", 160 pounds. The way he walked, he didn't stand up straight. His head drooped, and he was kind of slow to respond at times. But he loved hanging out with Weir. He really felt like Weir was his best friend.
Then we have Gary Dale Mathias, who was 25, He was 5'10", 170 pounds. He was, I guess, the latecomer to the group, the final friend in this circle.
Yeah, he showed up about a year or so before. The rest of the guys had known each other a number of years. He was an Army veteran, just like Madruga was. He left the military due to a psychiatric discharge because of drug problems. He had been in Germany, and his discharge happened about 5 years prior to 1978. There are police records on him, and it showed that he was violent on occasion and had been charged with assault a couple of times. He was on medications because he had schizophrenia. Now, when you take medications for something like this, you need to take them regularly. And there were times, you know, after he got back from Germany where he didn't take his drugs. They said that he lapsed into a disoriented psychosis that would land him in the Veterans Administration hospital. And his stepfather, Bob, described him as he went haywire. You know, he's a little different from the other guys because the other guys are considered mentally handicapped or lower IQ. But Gary Mathias is considered high functioning. But they also say, though, he doesn't do well in stressful situations and that his functioning does deteriorate when placed under stress.
I would actually argue that all these guys are somewhat high functioning for their diminished capacity. They're able to get themselves up in the morning and go through a regimented day. They're not completely helpless by any stretch of the imagination. And they are very active. I mean, they're all friends. They go out and do things. It's said that two of them actually had found somebody overdosing from drugs and were able to call for help and get that person an ambulance and save their life. So they are functioning. So they have a love for basketball, and there's events going on, games going on in their hometown, right?
Well, they have a favorite team, and that's UC Davis. UC Davis was going to be playing Chico State. Well, they could easily get to Chico State by car, and they even had their own game they were going to be playing in. They decided to go on a trip, which again would show you just because you say they're mentally handicapped or lower functioning, however you want to describe that, they can still go off on a trip together. And it's Jack Madruga who has a car. It's a 1969 Mercury Montego. They can get in this car and they can head off to go see this game, UC Davis versus Chico. It's a 46-mile drive for them, which it'll take about an hour for them to get to Chico. They take 70 Highway, and then they take the Oroville East exit.
Yeah, and that should keep them on flat land and on the highways.
They leave for the game, but then no one hears from them. To give you an idea just how excited they were, they all had these shirts that had Gateway Gators across the chest. And it was because that was the name of their team for the Yuba City Vocational Rehabilitation Center that they were a part of. Even Mathias had been bugging his mom saying, hey, we're going to be playing Saturday. Don't let me oversleep. He really wanted to make sure that he was on the right schedule so that everything would go smoothly. But no one heard from them come Saturday.
And we'll find out that no one saw them at the game.
Yeah, so we don't even know if they were even at that game. Now, granted, they could have made it, and then no one saw them or noticed them. After the game lets out, they stop at a Bears market. The clerk who is there is described as being mildly annoyed by these men who buy one Hostess cherry pie, a Langendorf lemon pie, a Snickers bar, a Marathon bar, two Pepsis, and a quart and a half of milk. Right there is kind of odd because there are five men traveling, but it looks like they have items for four, right? If we're counting these items, there are four drinks and four snacks.
It sounds kind of random, yeah.
But perhaps one of them didn't feel like eating or drinking anything.
And I'm sure that if the clerk was annoyed, it was probably because they were fooling around or maybe not acting quite their age and having a good time.
Saturday morning at 5, Ted Weir's mother wakes up, and according to her, she wakes up afraid. She doesn't know why. She just feels like something is wrong. So she gets on the phone and she calls Bill Sterling's mother. His mother had been up since 2, and she's worried. The plan was, let's just be clear about this, because I don't know that we've been clear enough, but they're supposed to go see UC Davis play Chico in Chico. Then they were going to come back. And then the next day, they were going to play basketball for their team.
So they were expected home that night. And when their mothers wake up Saturday morning and their sons are not there, it's raising the alarms.
Yeah, and these aren't people, other than Matthias, these aren't people known to stay out. And so the game let out at about 10 p.m. They were expected back, I would imagine, before midnight.
Yeah, and that's the problem is these guys follow a very regimented day. They do not break the rules. They do not rebel against their parents. They're very well-behaved people. So they should have come home, and it's obvious something is wrong.
The only one that doesn't quite fit that is Matthias, because he had disappeared a few times where he ended up at his grandmother's house and he didn't tell anyone. But yeah, for the most part, these aren't men who break their routine because that's what helps them. Then Mrs. Weir is feeling worried here. Then she calls Jackie Hewitt's mother, and then Mrs. Weir's daughter-in-law walked down the street and talked to Gary Mathias's stepfather, Bob. By 8 that evening, Mrs. Madruga called the police. The Yuba County Sheriff's Department started searching for these guys. This is all happening on February 25th. On February 28th, Jack Madruga's car is found, his Mercury Montego. A forest ranger came across it on an unpaved road near Oroville. Now remember, it was the Oroville exit that they needed to take. And it's in an area known as Rogers Cow Camp Area.
Just because I just want to reemphasize, this is the late 70s. We don't have GPS, MapQuest, nothing. You just know where you're going. But these guys knew their way around, or at least Madruga knows his way around. So it's weird that the car is found up the side of this mountain completely in the opposite direction of where they should be.
Right. So Chico and their location, where at least where the car is found, is about 70 miles. It just doesn't make sense that they would be 4,500 feet above sea level. To give you a better idea, it's a 2.5-hour drive from Chico. How they ended up going away from where they were supposed to go, I don't know. I mean, that's part of the mystery here.
I mean, it's one exit that they missed, but if they know where they're going up a mountain, and that's not gelling. The weather's not the best. It is nighttime.
The weather wasn't kind because there was a lot of snow dumped in that area.
Yeah, anyone that's been in this area of California, California is a very interesting place. You have warm beaches and snow on the mountains all at the same time. And this is in February, so it's winter.
Police look over this vehicle. Again, this is the county sheriff's department. The vehicle is unlocked and one of the windows is down. They don't find the keys with the vehicle, but the police are wondering if perhaps the vehicle was stuck somehow, or if maybe they couldn't start the vehicle back up. Maybe it died. So they hotwire it to see if the car will start, and it starts immediately.
So there's gas in it and it's running.
There's no damage to this car that they can find. This is the kind of road where they would expect some damage to happen, especially if they were driving at night, given the wintry conditions, but they just don't see any evidence other than, I mean, it seems like the car was driven very carefully. And that's something that fits with the vehicle and with Madruga, because people said that Madruga loved his car. But that's where, with the window being down, that's something that doesn't really fit.
No, it doesn't. And I think the damage reference is more about they weren't sideswiped by another car or ran off the road. I just don't understand how you damage your car driving down a road.
Well, they said that the road had some ruts and stuff in it where maybe if you're cruising along a little too quick, you could create some damage. But obviously, they were driving carefully. They did find the items that were bought at Bears. And so the story of the clerk getting annoyed with them, and then, of course, they find the items that they had purchased, it makes sense. So again, there's nothing about this that seems like foul play other than that the window was down. And you might even say because the car is locked, because if Madruga is going to walk away from his car, maybe he would lock it. I don't know. But then again, it is the late 70s.
It's cold out and the window's down. That's not normal to me. And of course, the men not being anywhere around the area and not found, that is very out of the ordinary.
So again, the conditions, they're very, very snowy, very cold. The search lasts for about 5 days and they can't find these men. I say 5 days, but a severe blizzard moved in and I guess that would hamper their search efforts, because if you have these guys walking through snowy areas, you'd think they'd leave prints. But once this blizzard goes through, if they hadn't found the prints by then, well, they're never going to find them.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
They were not dressed for cold weather. They were expecting to get in a warm car, drive to a game, you know, so possibly light jackets is all they're really wearing. And one of their mothers actually said, "You're not dressed appropriately for the cold." And they protested and said, "Well, I'm just going to the game. I don't need to be wearing a huge winter coat." I will say that when I would drive to work every day, you know, in the Midwest, I would wear a light coat, or I just would not dress for it because I'm always going from one climate controlled environment to another. But if your car breaks down, I mean, luckily for me, I work and live in a very populated area, so I could get to civilization within a quarter mile wherever I broke down. But these guys, there's not a lot out there. If you have to walk even 5 miles in this freezing cold, it could be pretty deadly.
The authorities would like some assistance with this case. And when you ask for assistance, sometimes you get it. You just don't know if it's useful or not. And in this case, there's a woman that reported seeing these 5 guys in a red pickup truck on Saturday and Sunday, but she said it was at a different location, and it's at a location that's about an hour's drive from where the car was found. She operated a store there, and she said that 2 of them came in to buy food, and 1 of them made a phone call from a phone booth, but that the other 2 stayed in the truck. So again, she has the right number of guys, but the way she describes the way they act and what they're doing doesn't really fit with what people would expect from this group. It doesn't seem like she really has the right people.
And their parents would say that they don't have enough money or weren't given enough money to make several stops at convenience stores. So they doubt this sighting immediately.
But there's another witness, Joseph Shones, who is 55 years old. He had driven his Volkswagen Bug up the same road where the mercury was found. And he said he was on that road sometime after 5:30 that same evening. I guess it would have been that Friday. But he said he was up there because he was interested in bringing his wife and daughter up that weekend. And he wanted to check the area out. But
picked the wrong day to go up there.
Yeah, he really did. And his car got stuck in the snow, which is just above the snow line. So he's 50 yards beyond where the mercury was found. I guess as he was trying to free his car, he had a heart attack.
Now, he doesn't die from this heart attack.
It was a mild one.
Yeah, but it's enough where it puts him down and he has to crawl back into his car, start it up for the heat, and just lay there and hope that somebody comes around. And he claims that somebody does come around, right?
He describes hearing whistling noises just down the road. So he gets out of his car, and I think it's because, hey, maybe help has arrived, right? Maybe someone can drive him out of there. And he says, when he looks down that way, down the road, he says he sees a group of men and a woman carrying a baby. And he said they're walking around in front of a vehicle's headlights. He calls out for help, but then he says the headlights go out and all the talking stops. So he gets back in his car and lays down. I think he's had a mild heart attack, and I don't think he's up for any kind of physical work here. He doesn't want to go down toward them, so he just lays back down.
And then it's a few hours later that he says that he sees lights outside his car, like flashlights. And again, he yells out and says, hey, I need help. And the flashlights are turned off, and whoever's checking out his vehicle goes away. He will say that it's possible that the vehicle he saw was a pickup, but it's nighttime, the headlights are on, he's having a heart attack. It's not really clear if he actually did see a pickup, because when I hear that, then I think of the lady at the convenience store that said, oh, I saw these guys on a red pickup truck. Well, I think, well, is that a connection? But it's not really verified that he saw this.
His car eventually ran out of gas, and it was still dark at that time, but he does decide to walk to find help. He makes his way back down. As he does, he passes by a Mercury Montego, which is obviously the same car that the five men had been in. We don't know how accurate his story is because he's just telling it the way he remembers it. And he was going through some serious stuff. If you're having a mild heart attack and you're worried about freezing out there, he has a lot going on.
Yeah, I don't think he's hallucinating, but he might not be able to regurgitate details from the night because he's dealing with his own stuff. And I don't know, I just think walking in the freezing cold down a mountain for miles after you've just had a heart attack, I'm surprised he lived.
But I do think it's interesting that he describes the situation as one in which he called for help, and each time that he did, the people who were talking stopped talking and lights went out. So possibly a clue, I think. It's in June of 1978 when a motorcyclist is riding through the area and noticed a broken window on a Forest Service trailer. This service trailer is about 60 feet long. The trailer is, and this is questionable because most people report it as 19 miles up the mountain from where the car was found, but could have been 8 or 12 miles. It just depends on who you ask and what map you're looking at, but it's less than 19. But either way, you're talking about a several hours or more walk from the car up to this trailer. And the reason we're talking about that is because inside this trailer, which has a broken window, is the body of Ted Weir.
And he's laying in a bed. His facial hair is grown out. He's lost between 80 and 100 pounds. His feet are severely frostbitten. His shoes are missing.
And he's also been draped in 8 bed sheets. And they literally cover his neck all the way to his toes.
I'm assuming that this is for warmth because there wasn't a lot of blankets, so they just layered him up with sheets.
There were clothes inside the trailer that he wasn't using that he could have used for warmth, but it appeared that he was tucked in, that he couldn't have just tucked himself in that way. So they're investigating this, and according to their estimation, the authorities believe that he may have lived 8 to 13 weeks after his disappearance based on his beard growth and his approximate 100-pound weight loss. It appears as though either himself and some other people had been eating some sea rations that were available on site.
Now, there's a locker full of food. There's matches laying around. There's a propane heater outside. There's books, wooden furniture, tons of stuff that they could have used for warmth, tons of food that they could have eaten, but none of it has been used or eaten.
But these cans that were opened with a special can opener, right, Justin?
Yeah, it's a P38, which is pretty much just a flat piece of metal with a curved blade, I guess, and it's a military-style can opener. And it's not the most easy thing to figure out if you've never been shown how to use it. So only people with military experience might have a clue how to open a can with this thing.
And in regards to the men we've been talking about, the two that would know how to use one of these can openers would be Matthias and Madruga. But if only 12 of them were opened, and this guy lived for 8 to 13 weeks, I mean, somehow he had to have been taken care of, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, they look through this trailer and they try to take stock of what's in there to see if any of this stuff belonged to the men. They find a ring that belonged to Weir on the table next to the bed that he's in that has his name engraved on it. They also find a gold necklace that was his, along with a wallet that still had money inside of it, and then a gold Waltham watch, but its crystal was missing. And no one who was a relative of these missing men could identify it. So they don't know where that watch came from. So it's kind of difficult to understand what happened at this service trailer because there are 12 sea rations that have been opened and used. There is plenty more food available. It just wasn't used. So who made it to the trailer? Well, we know that Weir made it to the trailer. They continue to search for the missing men. At this point, they're still missing Sterling, Madruga, Hewitt, and Matthias. The day after they find Weir's body, and about 4.5 miles away from there, they believe that they found Sterling and Madruga. Madruga still had the keys to the car. Both of these guys were on on opposite sides of the road that led to the trailer. And so they were about 11.4 miles from the car. Madruga's remains had been scattered by animals. He had been dragged to a stream. His hand was still curled around his watch. Sterling was found in a wooded area, and his remains were scattered over about 50 feet. Again, I don't know how many times we have to say this, but if you have someone that goes missing in an area with wildlife, good luck finding them because the remains get scattered because of animals.
It sucks because if there was foul play, if they were shot or something, it's hard to determine that when the remains have been eaten, or just really hard to tell what is animal predation and what could have been a weapon used against them. So we assume that they weren't murdered, but again, it's hard to tell with the state of their bodies.
Jack Hewitt was found 2 days later. He was found off the same road, but he was much closer to the trailer. This is kind of sad, I think, but his father was out helping to search. And I know that the authorities, I told him, hey, maybe you shouldn't be out here. What if you find something? If his son was dead, he wanted to know. He wanted to find his remains. And he found his son's backbone along with some of his items, including a pair of Levi's and his ripple-soled Get There's shoes. So it's kind of a sad moment, but at least he has found his remains. His skull would be found the next day. It was about 100 yards downhill from the other bones they had found. And this skull was identified by Jack's dentist.
They were not able to find Gary Mathias. No body. They know that he made it to the trailer because they found his shoes, right?
Well, it's a speculation, but it's probably a good one. Just because you find his shoes doesn't mean that they know for sure that he was there, but it makes sense because Weir was missing his. He actually had what, boots?
Yeah.
And the speculation is because Matthias's shoes were found in the trailer that he must have taken Weir's boots and put them on. Matthias was not as large a man as Weir, but heck, if your feet are frostbitten and
swollen,
maybe those larger boots will actually fit you a lot better. Plus, they're better for moving around in the, you know, in the conditions.
Weir is incapacitated or not able to take care of himself. Who's taking care of him? It seems that somebody was feeding him. Somebody was tucking him in and into this bed. So we go with Matthias was the one that continued on. Now, we don't have his body, but if he climbed up the mountain or tried to get somewhere and, hey, they just never found him, it's possible. Or if Matthias has had some sort of breakdown, he's off his meds, he might have gotten down the mountain and then and is just living homeless on the streets. We don't know.
Some people will never believe that Gary Mathias was even there. But I think that because they found the sea rations that had been opened with the can opener, these guys probably wouldn't know how to use it unless they were former military. And, well, Madruga and Mathias are both former military guys. They know how to use this opener. Someone tucked Weir in. And I would say that that's sometime before he died. It seems like it was most probably Gary Mathias. But again, there are things about this whole case that will constantly bring up questions. And one of those, and I brought it up earlier, was whoever stopped at that Bear's store, well, they only bought enough items for four people, four drinks and four snacks. And yet there were supposed to be five men along. So it's kind of difficult to say. I'll just leave that to you to figure out. The investigation into this, I'd say, is pretty good. They want to figure out if the men even tried to stay with the vehicle, tried to figure out why they would have ended up at the trailer. That one's easy, actually, because a snowcat had gone through the area and had packed down the snow on the way to the trailer from where the car was. So that whole line was easy to follow for people on foot because you don't really want to go off this road into nature because you're not going to do well out there. So following this path that's been compacted down by the snowcat, it seems like a direct line to possible safety.
Well, that's true. But why are they leaving the car and going to this trailer? I mean, I understand how they got there. I understand why they took that route because it was the path of least resistance. But why are they doing it? Why are they even here on this mountain? These are the problems.
Right. Again, there are so many questions here that will cause you to doubt your own theory of what happened. The car had gas left in it. I think it was about 6 gallons. They could have left the car running, but again, they left it for some reason. One theory is that they had the lights on the car, they had gotten out of the car, and they were looking around trying to figure out what to do, and then they heard from a man up the road. And we already talked about his story, but maybe they got a little freaked out when they heard him calling. One, they probably didn't expect to hear anybody else on that road. It's just curious to me that they would get really freaked out by someone calling out to them because maybe they could have used some help. Maybe they could have talked to someone who actually knew where they should go. When they were driving on this road, it's understood that their tires would have been slipping here and there. So going back down the road, maybe not the best idea. But what do you think, Justin? I mean, why stop and get out and leave one of the windows down?
Well, I take Heart Attack Man's account somewhat seriously, as he said that he saw a woman with a baby. Now, I think, why would they have the window down? Well, they were approached by somebody and they rolled down the window. They pulled the car over and they talked to someone. And then something happened that made them flee the vehicle. My original theory was they were driving up this mountain and there's a woman with a baby. It's freezing cold outside on the side of a mountain. Why would you not stop to help her? And then possibly, maybe she's a ploy. She's somebody to reel you in. And then her boyfriend or her partner in crime comes around with a gun and then they rob you. So they pull over to the side of the road to help this woman with a baby. And then the robbers jump out. The men decide, well, we're out of here and we're going to run up the mountain to escape. Or maybe they were held at gunpoint and then decided to make a run for it. But the problem with my theory is, why were they there in the first place? It doesn't explain why they're driving up this mountain, which is obviously not the right place to be going, right?
One theory could be that someone met up with them at that bear store or just outside of it and played a prank on them or tricked them into going there so they could rob them. That might explain why the window was down. Maybe they both stopped on the road. Someone got out and tried to rob them and then they took off. But would someone be using a gun? I mean, why would you run from a gun? And how would five men get away like that? And why wouldn't the Shones guy hear any gunshot? It's kind of difficult to believe. But then again, all along this case, there are little questions here and there that are difficult to put together under one umbrella, at least as far as the answers go.
Well, to go with my theory of possible foul play, then I think, well, maybe they met the woman with the baby at the convenience store or somewhere along the road, like a hitchhiker. And they picked her up. And then she said, hey, I need to go this direction to go home, something to that effect. And then they gave her a ride. Then something went wrong. That would be the only explanation, is that they were lured up the mountain.
But would they have room in this Mercury Montego for a sixth person?
Pretty big car. it would be a very tight fit. Exactly.
But let's go back to Shones. Shones was saying, thought there might have been two vehicles.
Yeah. So they go up the mountain and there's another vehicle, maybe her counterpart. And that guy jumps out, holds the men at gunpoint or captive somehow. We never hear that there was another car, really, just besides the fact that they said there was the men and this woman with a baby standing in front of a car or headlights. It doesn't say any more than that. So we don't know. But that's sort of my foul play angle, is they were coaxed there. They were lured there by somebody that was going to rob them or something. It's not the best theory, though, because one, five guys in a car, that's not the best target to rob. You know, it's like that's, you know, but if you have a gun, hey, give me all your wallets and then I'm out of here. So that's foul play, at least in my mind, is they met somebody along the road or somehow took a wrong turn, ended up on the mountain and then ran into somebody. But I think the first is more likely.
Another theory is that Gary Mathias had them drop him off somewhere because Mathias wasn't with them. They ran into some trouble driving around and got lost.
Wasn't Mathias from a town like over the mountain through the woods, that they could have gone that way?
Yeah, it wasn't that he was from the area that you're referencing, which is Forbestown, but he knew a guy there. There's speculation that maybe he wanted to be dropped off over there because he wanted to use drugs again. You can lapse and you can start using again. So maybe, despite all of his talk about looking forward to the basketball games that weekend, maybe he was really planning on going away, because he had done it a few times where he took off, ended up somewhere that they weren't expecting him.
Or it's possible that he was off his meds and just decided, we're going somewhere else today, guys. But I don't know. I mean,
so if he's off of his medications, then, you know, things can get very, very weird, especially if they get lost because he's sending them in the wrong direction. Then he's known under stress to become less capable. And I could see where if they get lost, then he's no help. And this is where if someone's calling out to them, maybe he takes it as, uh-oh, we're in trouble. And so what are the other guys going to do? They might just feed off of what he's doing.
Yeah, go along with it.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
How do you think they ended up on the side of this mountain?
Well, I don't know that I can say anything where most of the audience is just going to nod their head and say, yeah, probably. But I really feel like deep down, this is a case of missing your exit. I mean, I've done it a number of times and, you know, luckily for me, nothing bad's happened. But, you know, if you miss your exit and you get off at a place that you've never been to and you're not prepared for, then things can go south. A couple of these guys had already been in areas like this area and never wanted to go back. You know, one guy went fishing, didn't want to go back there the next time. Another guy went camping, did not want to go back. They didn't like the outdoors, especially in an area like this where you don't have the comforts of home.
I get missing an exit and possibly going very far out of your way and getting lost. I guess my issue is, why did they pull over to the side of the road and then leave the safety and heat of the car?
Well, they pull up and ahead of them is Sean's car. Possibly they couldn't get around it or didn't think they could get around it. So they get out and start talking about what they're going to do because they don't feel confident backing up, and yet they can't really go forward. Maybe Sean's yelling freaked them out. Maybe that is what it took. I mean, it just takes one wrong decision. You have dominoes falling. I know that sounds like I'm oversimplifying, but I could totally see it.
I figure if there's five of them, it might be cramped in the car. So a few of them try to head out to find if there's shelter somewhere else. They saw the snow cat trail. But then I would just assume that they would go up there, find the trailer, and then come back. But again, they're not dressed for this weather. If two of them go and then don't come back, then the next two go to go find them. Where are they at? Why haven't they returned? It could go downhill very quickly. I wonder, like, if you're going up a mountain, why wouldn't you just turn the car around? You know, just turn it around and go back down, you know?
I don't know that they could turn around. I think that's part of the problem.
And it's an unpaved road, so there's that.
And they're up by the snow line. So it may be that they could slip and go off the road, and that would be really bad. The distance from the car to the trailer, again, is disputed. It could have been 12 miles, could have been 19.
But still, it's a long journey, which middle of the night, freezing cold weather, that's not good.
Going uphill, and some of it in snow, your feet are getting frostbitten because you're not wearing the correct clothing. You're not prepared. That's more than 4 hours walk. That's going to take its toll.
So not all the men were found together. We assume that Weir and Matthias made it to the trailer, but the rest of them were found other places. Did they not stick together? Were they venturing out in different ways?
You already said they could have left at different times from the car. It's possible they went in different groups. Or maybe they were all headed to the trailer, but they just didn't all make it. Maybe some of them got lost. Maybe they didn't wait for each other. Or maybe they were too far apart. This is part of the reason why they call this the American Dyatlov Pass. Because just like with the people in that case, it's strange that they would be found out in the weather like that. Why didn't they stay where things were comfy? You wonder, were they scared? Were they chased? But if they were chased, how did they get away?
Well, I think if somebody pulls a gun on them and they all jump out of the car and run up the mountain, or they got out of the car and then had a gun pulled on them and they ran up the mountain, maybe it was a fake gun. Maybe the gun's not even loaded. And five guys running in different directions in a panic, who are you going to chase after? And are you going to chase after them? Maybe you're just like, okay, well, that robbery didn't work, and you just flee the scene also.
Another theory is that they could have just scattered to get away from whatever was going on because the window was down. And if they went off into the woods and then had to make their way back to the trail, maybe they couldn't figure out where the car was. And so they just followed that road, but they're going a different way.
Again, I just assume that you could follow the trail back. Obviously, they survived for some time, and Weir had survived for weeks. Is he not capable of moving? I guess if his feet are so frostbitten that he can't walk, then he's stuck at the trailer. But who's taking care of him? And is that person capable of literally just following a trail back down a hill? It's the mystery. Why can't they get back to this car? They have an out. They have an escape. Why aren't they eating the food or burning the propane or burning anything for warmth? And I think that their diminished cognitive abilities is a part of this. I mean, not only are they a little slow, but now they're starving and in freezing cold weather.
I think a lot of people would have had problems trying to handle the situation. I guess in my head, again, it's an accident. We're lost. And then people are trying to find their way back to the car. I think some of them made it to the trailer and some of them didn't because it was too much for them. And again, if you just think about Weir's feet being frostbitten as bad as they were, then what was happening with the other guys? And it's treacherous terrain. So this is something we bring up every time someone gets lost or killed or dies, I should say, out in the wilderness. It's because you weren't ready for it. It just takes one accident and you're done in. And in this case, each of these men had to find a way to survive. Really, in the end, the real mystery isn't just how did they end up there? Because that is, I think Justin's right. That's the biggest mystery. But the other mystery is, where did Gary Mathias go? Because they managed to find everybody else. They weren't able to find Gary Mathias. He was considered the most capable of the five. So I think some people, because they hear that, have it in their head that he must have gotten away. The way I think of it is, I think he left to try and get help and left Weir there, and he didn't make it either.
Yeah, I think Mathias just got further away than the rest of them to the point where they couldn't find him.
But we don't have all the answers, and even with any theory you come up with, there's a question or two that makes you feel not so confident in your theory. In this one, I have a theory, but there are still aspects that I can't quite come up with an answer for. Part of this is, again, me putting myself in that situation. I've gotten lost just driving to my grandparents years ago and ended up in a town two cities over. I went driving to go to my cousins and ended up in the opposite direction. And it's because I don't have a good sense of direction. I really don't.
I don't use navigation or GPS on my phone because I just go where I'm going. So I can't put myself in other people's shoes because I always have a sense of direction. I can ask somebody, hey, which way do I need to go? And they can just point me in the right direction. I drove from Kansas City to LA without a map. I just went west and found my way. I'm just screaming, the car's right there. Just go back down the hill. Just go back to the car. Why are you doing this? And that's why I go for the foul play or somebody scared them away from the vehicle, because I just can't wrap my head around them walking away from the vehicle, them getting lost in the woods, or them driving up this mountain in the first place.
I really believe that Schoen scared them. Obviously, that wasn't his intention, but that's just how I envision this, is that Schoen's freaked them out.
I think if somebody was holding them captive and then you hear this other vehicle, this other car, you know, you see this other car and there's somebody screaming for help, well, then the captives are going to say, okay, everybody shut up, be quiet. That's what I had in my head when I was reading about this. But again, it's trying to put yourself in their shoes, and it might have just freaked them out, and they might not have had a gun held at them. They might have just been on their own trying to figure out what to do next.
One thing that occurred to me recently, you and I were talking about this case, and we were talking about the window being down, and Madruga's mother said, oh, he wouldn't have left the car like that. But you brought this up a number of times, where it's possible that they didn't all leave exactly at the same time. And if Madruga left the car before, let's say, someone else did, then if someone was left behind with the car, or two people were left behind the car that weren't Madruga, then maybe they wouldn't roll the window back up. But then again, you know, a window being down like that because they were talking to somebody, i.e. foul play, then that explains it too. So any which way you want to go with this case, it could be any number of things. And I actually read somewhere where someone was talking about, they were surprised that no one, and I'm not saying no one has, but I have yet to see it, that no one has tried to bring Bigfoot or aliens into this.
Well, it's like the past story, people bringing aliens and this light in the sky and rays coming down on them and them having radiation burns and whatnot. We don't have any of that in this case. All we have is men that appeared to be disoriented, scared, or lost.
Or all three.
Yeah.
And again, I want to emphasize that I think this could have happened to anybody that ended up in their situation. I don't think you have to be mentally handicapped or low cognitive ability or suffer from schizophrenia to die out there. You know, it's nature, and sometimes it's very cruel.
Well, I agree, because it was treacherous and cold and dark, and they're on the side of a mountain. If you end up in this situation, well, in today's world, you wouldn't end up on the side of the mountain. Hopefully GPS would take you in the right direction. And if you do end up on the side of the mountain, hopefully you still have a signal. These situations are fewer and far between now. It just doesn't happen as much. But if you're driving to work and you're driving that same trek every day and there's snow on the ground and you happen to slide off the road and your car turns upside down and you're in a ditch and no one sees you, you're going to die if no one finds you in a day or two and you're stuck underneath your car. So it's always good to wear that extra layer of clothing, to have an extra blanket in your car, something to that effect.
We'd like to thank Third Love for sponsoring today's episode. Be sure to go out to their Fit Finder quiz at thirdlove.com and answer a few simple questions to find your perfect fit. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/GenY now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your purchase. That's thirdlove.com/GenWHY for 15% off today.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.